Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another Talking Rugby Union podcast. My name is Joe Harvey, and I'm joined by TRU editor, my boss, Chris Heal.
That's a big title. You know who's the big boss, and it's not me. But thanks for the intro, Joe. Hope you're well, mate.
Yeah, not too bad at all. It's been a lovely day here. And we're joined by someone else who, unfortunately, had to work today, but is now with us after a grueling 10-hour shift, Elizabeth Cartwright, TRU contributor. Elizabeth, how are you?
Hello, I'm good, thanks, Joe. How are you doing?
Not bad at all. I've been sunning things up today. It's all that could really be done, to be honest. some might say I've wasted my day. Chris would agree, because he's in charge.
Completely disagree, Joe.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't do anything, mate. I don't do any work. Don't know if you've ever noticed that.
Yeah, I mean, you've got a day off tomorrow, Joe, which you're not taking a day off for, and it just completely defeats the object. You go, yeah, I'm going to have Wednesday off. Yeah, that's fine, mate. Take Wednesday off when I know you're going to be working.
I mean, yeah, you've got me. I prefer to think of it as a writer's retreat.
Yeah, no, Joe, you're doing yourself a disservice there, mate.
Okay, well, anyway, I mean, what we're here to talk about today is the Women's Six Nations, which does kick off this Saturday afternoon. It feels like it's been a long time in the making. It feels like not even that long ago that we didn't actually have a clue what was going to happen. All of a sudden, we have a clue what's going to happen. We have all the games ahead of us. We have previews for England, possibly for Ireland. That might get cut out if we don't. And we're going to just talk about all things Women's Six Nations ahead of the tournament's start date this weekend, this Easter weekend, which I have to remember it's Easter, because if I don't get my family eggs, I'm getting kicked out again. Where else to start other than our home nation, the three of us? I think we're all going to be cheering this nation on at the weekend. I don't think there's...
Before we start, Joe, we've got the biggest England fan on the podcast.
That is true. Sport Bible's very own.
So it's a social media sensation.
I had no idea. Like, I literally had to keep it under wraps. And I was like, it was the hardest thing I had to do. It was so difficult. But it was very cool. So, yeah. Jamie George was very nice. We had a chat afterwards. It's quite decent, to be fair. So, yeah,
it was just damn weird because I was on Facebook and it came up, and it's just because it's Sport Bible. I went, yeah. I know that girl. And I was just like, oh, that's mad. And then I saw you didn't like tweet anything, so I thought she must be like waiting until she's allowed to like put it on social media or something. So it was just damn weird. I was like, oh, biggest thing in the world there.
It was really cool, and it was so funny because I knew it was them from the off. Like, as soon as they started talking, I was like, it's definitely that. I was like, that is definitely Jamie George. And then they were like, yeah, best on to us. And I was like, yeah, guys, like, I knew, but I kind of tried to keep it kind of cool. But no, it was still surreal. And like, and even like getting the shirt and everything and the setup, like, because I'd never done anything like it before. And it was just really surreal. So, yeah, it was something that will live long in memory. So, yeah, it was good fun.
Yeah, it was very cool. It was very cool to see like every other day on like even the sponsored ads. I don't know if that was for you, Chris. You got the sponsored ones coming through as well. Oh, mate, I'm just such a big Sport Bible fan. And yeah, I started getting sponsored ads through, and I was seeing Beth, who obviously wrote for us, and it was like, this is pretty bloody cool.
We're getting the big names on, Joe. We're getting the big names every week. Charlie Beckett, Elizabeth Cartwright.
Massive.
We hit the ceiling now, I think.
It's only downhill from here, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, we've been saying that for a number of years, but
we have. We still go, though, don't we? We still carry on.
Yeah, just about. Pretty much since I walked in the door at TRU, to be honest.
No, I've been going up, Joe, since you walked through the door at TRU.
Oh, mate, nearly 3 years. We'll talk about that at a different time, I suppose. Because we do actually have some PR plan, but that's a different matter entirely. But we're here to talk about the Six Nations. I'm sorry that I forgot to put that intro in there, Chris. I wrote the run order. I'm a prat. I do apologise. We might as well start off by talking about Pool A, because this year the Women's Six Nations has been cut into two pools, which means there's only going to be two games each, and then there's going to be a grandstand final taking place between the top place side in each of the pools. So for anyone that maybe doesn't know the structure, that's basically the Autumn Nations Cup structure. We'll look at it that way. That's probably an easy way to look at it.
Let's hope it doesn't go the same way.
just box kicking every game.
Miserable.
For about 60 odd minutes, was it?
Yeah, I can't see that myself.
No, because obviously the weather is going to be a bit nicer. I think we're expecting some fast, exciting attacking rugby. But we might as well start off by talking about England, the nation I imagine we'll all be kind of calling on. We've got the biggest super fan in the country on the podcast. So England are arguably the favourites coming into this, having won three of the last four tournaments. France are the only side to have won it in the meantime with a Grand Slam of their own in 2018. I suppose I'll start off with you, Beth. Is it so easy to say that England will walk this tournament?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? I think they've definitely got a good chance. I mean, even though they've got like quite a few injuries, they've still got a lot that have come back into the side as well, which I think is really exciting. And also the development, some of the development girls are in there too, aren't they? Which I think is really good. So yeah, I don't know whether it will be easy as such, but I definitely think they've got a good chance. And I'm looking forward to watching it. And I think it's great to have some of that coverage on BBC Two and on the iPlayer as well. I think that would be massive to grow the game. I mean, I loved it when it was on in the autumn. It was so good to follow, wasn't it? I don't know about you guys, but yeah, I thought it was fantastic. And they're a pleasure to watch, aren't they? I mean, I watched the Harlequin Saracens game at the weekend. My goodness, it was just beautiful running rugby. It was really, really good to watch. So yeah, I'm excited. It'll be good fun to see.
Yeah, definitely. And Chris, I know you've had a conversation with a man who is probably a bit in the know about these sort of things. Who do you speak to and what is he going to be talking about in the clip we're going to play shortly?
Well, I wish we'd actually spoken to the man who's always in the know, Nick Keith, about women's rugby, but I'm sure that's one for another date. But yeah, Sam Middleton, Red Roses head coach, kindly gave up his time at the start of this week to kind of chat about all things preparations for the Red Roses. As Beth touches on there, kind of the new players that are coming to the squad, and that squad depth in particular was something he was keen to express. He basically was saying, obviously, the strength of the league, the AP15s, it's just been brilliant this year. And I think, again, highlighted by Quinn Saracens on the weekend. But also he said he's picked a squad just because of COVID reasons and stuff like that, which can, you know, deal with all the testing. But the strength of depth was something he was keen to mention. And he was keen to mention, obviously, the opportunity the Six Nations has this year, the Women's Six Nations have this year, with being a standalone tournament away from the Men's Six Nations. So it's great to chat to him for about 10-15 minutes. And here comes the clip. And now I'm joined by England Red Roses head coach Simon Middleton on the TRU Women's Six Nations podcast. Simon, thanks so much for taking the time to speak to us on the week where the Six Nations begins. How's preparations gone? I guess there's a good bubble and excitement around the team.
Yeah. We're literally just arriving at the hotel now, just on the in the middle of Doncaster. So we're here for a week, and everybody's absolutely buzzing to go. You know, we seem to have been waiting to play an international game forever. So we've had a good probably 10-12 weeks preparation, and we're really keen to see how we're going to go.
Yeah, you mentioned obviously it's been a while since the girls represented England, and you've been able to coach the team for a full 80 minutes, Simon. And a lot's been made about obviously the shifting of the tournament and the format this year. But is there overwhelming sense that you're just itching to get going? The girls are raring to go. You just want to get the Six Nations played.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think there's just so many challenges with everything these days that I think just to keep sport rolling is a massive thing, and to keep the women's game rolling is a massive thing. And, you know, I think a lot of people would love to have seen the Six Nations in its usual format. But I think the key bit was to get the games on. And I know there's a tremendous amount of work to do that. And, you know, it's been shifted and from its traditional dates to April to make it work, and that gives us a great opportunity in itself. But yeah, I was saying to the staff the other day, I mean, one of the other beauties is that the AP15s have been rolling on week in, week out, so the girls get to play. So although they prepare with us, they get to play with their clubs, but the staff have just been preparing. So when is this for the game now as the players are?
Just two things you mentioned there, Simon, I wanted to pick up on. You talked about like the opportunity potentially for the Six Nations, and last week obviously it was announced the BBC will be showing it, and then the finale will be on BBC Two. It does seem like it's a massive opportunity, and I know we were looking forward to the World Cup, and obviously that's been postponed, but it still feels like a really good time to strike for the women's game.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think you know, the whereas the postponement of the World Cup was, you know, was disappointing for everybody. I think everybody understood it, you know, when you stood back and looked at it, and the opportunities that it does give in terms of continuing to develop the squad, which, you know, we've got quite a young element to our squad, and we've got quite a bit of inexperience in some key areas, and that'll just give us some more time to develop that. I think the Six Nations, you know, obviously, I think there's been talk for a long time about the Women's Six Nations being a standalone event, and whether this is sort of by hook or by crook, that's what we've now got. The opportunity to be able to see how it goes as a standalone, see what sort of support it gets. And obviously, we've got fantastic support from the BBC now, so that's massive for us. I'm very much of the opinion, and I have been since the sort of, since the start of lockdown, that you've got to look at the opportunities that everything creates. And I think we've got some great opportunities, both off the back of the Six Nations being played now and off the back of the World Cup, you know, being shifted, as disappointing as it is.
Yeah, and it's all about being visible as well, isn't it, Simon? You know, it's accessible for people to sit down this Saturday, come in to watch England versus Scotland. Everyone loves an England-Scotland match, but whether you can watch it on the BBC, it just makes it so much more accessible for the future stars of the game as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's, for us, it's a massive, getting the game out there, there's huge. You know, I think we've made massive strides in terms of generating the support, and probably COVID struck at probably the worst time for us in terms of, you know, we were sort of really starting to, on a regular basis, fill out stadiums, 10,000, sort of 12,000 fans, and that sort of set us back a little bit. But, you know, the visibility we get from the media coverage is huge for us, and so obviously that's absolutely critical this weekend. And as you say, England Scotland anytime is a great game, and that, you know, we'll certainly be looking forward to it.
Yeah. You mentioned that obviously the girls have been playing AP15s throughout the course of the year. It's been great that the competition has been able to carry on. But does kind of the strength of the league sort of show in your squad selection as well, Simon? Because I think you've picked 38 members of the squad. It's a bigger than any number of players in another Six Nations squad. But it just shows the strength that you can be able to pick from at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, first and foremost, we've picked a light squad because of the testing protocols that we need to put in place. And the way it's set out is that you pretty much have to test 2 weeks in advance of any game. So you cover yourselves in terms of bringing the wider squad together. But having said that, I would only pick players into the squad who I felt were capable of playing at international level. And as you'll see, there's six development players in that squad. Now, the reason they're ready is because it's not just because they've trained with us and proved that. What they've actually done is develop their game in the AP15s. Mm-hmm. So they play week in, week out with some of the top clubs. And that's prepared them for it. And that's one of the essences of the league. It's one of the things we set out to do when we instigated the league in its new format, was to accelerate the development of those players and get a higher quality of league fixture week in, week out, so that international, the transition between club and international, isn't as great. And that's exactly what we've seen. You know, we brought them young players in, and they've been sensational. We've got six classes development under 20s, but we've also got Emily Robinson, who's an under 20s player, but I don't even class her as a development player. She's playing week in, week out with Quince. It's been absolutely outstanding for us. So yeah, it's fantastic. I think it shows the strength in depth. Shows the increase in strength in depth, which is the key bit, and it just gives a more significant pull to pick from.
Yeah, I think it goes maybe back as well, Simon, to that visibility thing we were just talking about, is if girls who were wanting to maybe pursue a career in rugby see, you know, yourself picking six development players, I know the list is them, but as you say there, they're more than capable of being in the squad. It just gives them that carrot, well, if they can do it, you know, I'm 17, 18, I can probably give it a shot as well.
Yeah, 100%. You know, you go back to 2017 and you could see the sort of younger players starting to surface. You know, Sarah Byrne was sensational in the 2017 World Cup. Was a very young player, so was Zoe Allcroft. And that trend's continued. You know, I think they've been the players who've really got the younger players sitting up and going, oh, that could be me. You know, and I openly say to the players who come into camp, you know, it's never too late to make the World Cup squad. And now it's very, very realistic for a lot of those players, because I've seen what players can do in the space of a year. You know, that's the nature of the women's game at the moment. I think the acceleration period in terms of learning and because of the strength of the programmes that are now in the league, the opportunities are that much greater. So, yeah, and you know, you look at how the league's developing and you think it's only going to go one direction, and that's upwards.
And maybe with the World Cup being postponed a year, Simon, there's going to be a few more selection headaches for yourself? I mean, these young girls are coming in and making life difficult for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as I say, some of the players are so good, so young. And that's testimony to the strength of the clubs. You know, we can only do so much with them. And you know, what we've always said is we want England to be an environment where the girls come in and literally it's about polishing things off rather than developing players. There's always development in everything you do. But that's so dependent on the quality of coaching, the quality of support they get in the clubs, and they're getting that now. So that, you know, the AP50 is a great product, but it supports us massively in terms of making players ready to play, ready to train when they come into us. And like I say, we can hopefully then put the extra little bits on that make them international players.
Yeah, and obviously you've got a great blend, Simon, in the squad with that youth and experience. And Sarah Hunter was on BT Sport on Sunday night and she was delighted to be back playing again. Great to have her involved. Obviously, her record speaks for herself, Simon.
Yeah, you know, we've really, really missed her. Missed her having around the place, missed her on the field. Because she's just everything she does, she leads from the front with the quality of everything she does. And I know it's been really frustrating for her. And, you know, she looked ready to go a couple of months ago, and then she had a little bit of a setback. So yeah, she played this weekend for Loughborough. So she's, you know, very much ready to get a good week's training in with us, and you know, we'll see how we go from there. But yeah, we, you know, you can't not miss a player like that.
Yeah, and just a couple more from me, Simon, because I know you've got to get off and get more important things done. But Scotland, Italy, obviously the two games which have been scheduled for your side over the next couple of weeks or so. A lot has been made of Scotland recently in terms of they seem to be developing and going in the right direction. So we may have seen a couple of years ago when I think you guys completely blew them out of the water at Twickenham how one-sided that could be. But it seems like a lot more competitive going into Saturday's game.
I think so. Yeah, you can see the improvement in them. And even, you know, we've played it unbelievably well the last couple of times we've played Scotland. And we've done it because we've known we've needed to be, you know, right on our mettle with them. And I think that's testimony to the way we've approached the game, but it's also testimony to the threat that they pose. And, you know, they're going to be no different this time around. They've got a lot of players playing in the AP50s, and high-quality players. So, you know, they've got threats all over the park. They're very well organised. We know they'll be aggressive. Now they come at us. So you know, we've got to be at our best. But as I say, we've been preparing real tough for a long, what seems like a long time now. And we've got a game we want to get on the park that we're excited to see. And that's what we'll be, we'll be really focusing on ourselves and how we deliver that.
Yeah, and I guess, Simon, probably the simplest question to answer is the next one, really. But obviously, you've set the bar incredibly high for yourselves with two Grand Slams in the last couple of years. Obviously, last season, finishing off with those victories against France as well. Is that the target as well for the Six Nations to go through unbeaten and set yourselves a good platform to work on going into next year with the World Cup?
Yeah, I think you know you're always going to win the competition you're in for. We want to win every game we play. And we certainly want to pitch ourselves as, you know, as potential champions again. But we've got Scotland first, then we've got Italy, and then hopefully we'll have a final. But as I say, we've worked really hard over the last few months on our game and the specific sort of type of game we want to play. And the key bit for me is that we translate that onto the playing field now, and that's why I'm so excited about seeing this play. You know, we got a particular brand that we want to play. We've changed our game around a little bit, and we want to see what it looks like on the field. And I think if we get that bit right, we'll definitely be in the mix.
Obviously, many thanks to Simon for his time there. Beth, I know you listened to Simon on the O2 Inside Line podcast. I know you spoke to him exclusively talking rugby not too long ago either. What is it about Simon that kind of impresses you the most? Because he seems to really have his finger on the pulse of women's rugby.
I don't know. I think it's all the extra stuff that he does too. It's a bit like with Eddie Jones, you know. And I think I love the fact that he gets the players involved with like different sessions as well. I was listening, and he was saying how even like the recovery or, you know, like training and things, and he kind of offers that to the players and how they cope with things. And, you know, his kind of take on that was quite interesting, you know, because it's a tough time and it's a long time to be within a bubble and stuff, but it was good to get, you know, their perspective on it as players, because that's tough, you know. And I think he's great for them, and it'll be exciting this weekend to watch, and the players he picks too, because like we've touched on, you know, it's quite an in-depth squad despite some injuries and things. And yeah, it'll be great. I'm looking forward to it. So yeah.
And to kind of just go into that a bit more, it's a 38-player squad, which is, mm-hmm. you know, ridiculous. When you think that England's men had 28 players yeah. basically to choose from for the entirety of the Six Nations that's just concluded, you know, that is massive. And I know six of those players are development players, but let's just look at some of the names that are coming back into the squad. And I think we start off with the skipper. Sarah Hunter's back after having missed out on the autumn entirely. She's basically not played rugby for, I mean, the best part of a year up until last weekend when she played for Loughborough against Exeter. Hannah Botterman's back. Bryony Cleal's back. She scored a try at the weekend.
She was brilliant, wasn't
it? Oh, she was very good. She was mm-hmm. very much up for that one. Vicky Fleetwood's back. She had, I think she mm-hmm. made some ridiculous amount of tackles at the weekend. Sarah McKenna, she was really good in defence against Quinns. Zoe Oldcroft's back. Obviously, she's so important at lock. I think me and Chris have seen that on numerous occasions, even when she was playing at university. Eleanor Perry, she came back at the weekend, scored a try. Lydia Thompson, and that's, you know, and she's at Worcester, a Worcester side that's doing really well at the moment. Then we look at the development players, Maud Muir, who scored a hat-trick of tries at the weekend, Flo Long from Worcester, Ellie Green from Harlequins, who of course is the AP15's top ever point scorer at the age of 20, 140, it would have changed, 148 conversions she's kicked in her time, and literally 20 penalties, which tells you something about the firepower that Quinns have. Merrin Doidge from Exeter, Beth Wilcott from Quinns, and then Flo Robinson from Exeter as well, who's the scrum half, who's been serving Quinns really well so far this season. They're only really missing Sarah Byrne, Mo Hunt, Laura Keats, and Morwenna Talling, who obviously bring so much experience. However, I mean, you look at the players stepping up, Chris. I mean, you must think to yourself, obviously, Sarah and Mo in particular probably, you know, the biggest misses. They're probably the biggest two players out of that group of missing players, obviously, all due respect to the other ones I've not mentioned. What do you think the key things are for England?
I think the thing with Simon is that he said that they've got a good blend in the team, and to have Sarah Hunter back in is invaluable. And he said, you know, that as much as we've missed her on the pitch, he was saying that we've missed her off it as well, and she just has that massive effect on the players, and a record speaks for itself, as does Emily Scarrett. But when you lose someone like Katie Day on the clean, I know you spoke to her, Joe, during the last Six Nations, and I think during the autumn potentially as well, it's going to be tough to lose that kind of leadership in someone who has been there and done it. But what this England squad have at the moment is experience of winning matches. And, you know, they've managed to dispatch France a couple of times in the autumn. Obviously, they seem to have got the better of them during the Six Nations as well. And they've always been the team that have, you know, really challenged England over the last couple of years. But this team is not only growing in experience, but they've also got those, not to be disrespectful, but those wise heads as well who've been there and won the biggest prize of them all. So that's what I think the big thing about this England squad is, that we can talk about all the young players coming through, but having people like Sarah Hunter, having people like Vicky Fleetwood around the group is just so, so invaluable for a team that is evolving, but also at the same time still has bags full of experience.
And that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, we've seen it with Eddie Jones and his sort of, what are they called, apprentice players? Is that what he calls them? Or was it something else? Like that? I can't remember. But we've seen that. So we've got these six players coming in, playing in, I mean, prop, obviously quite a key position, fly half, another key position as well. Obviously with Katie leaving, you've got to pick between Zoe and Scarrett. Scarrett can obviously play 10 as well. So there's the two options there. And then, you know, they're just trying to blood these young players now in order to get them ready. Do you think they're for the next cycle?
It's weird because, and I'll let Beth jump in on this as well. It's weird because Simon said in the chat with me, he was saying that, you know, I wouldn't have picked them if they weren't ready. And it's quite refreshing for a coach to say that, because you do see, like, I guess with any team sport, you do see young players coming in who are just there to embrace the environment, take it in. They might get a few minutes here and there. But you get the sense that the development's just a tag for these players. They're more than capable of stepping up. If Simon decides to pick one of them on Saturday against Scotland, I don't think anyone will be like, oh, wow, a development player's been picked. I think the strength of the AP15s makes Simon very, very confident in who he picks. And it's quite refreshing to hear from someone who's experienced stuff like Simon has so far.
Certainly. Beth, is anyone that was maybe a bit of an omission for you? Because obviously, with it being such a deep squad, you could probably argue that there isn't really anyone missing.
No, not that I can think of off the top of my head. It's decent. It's exciting. I'm excited to see Zoe Harrison play as well. Mm-hmm. I think having Ellie Green in there as well as a development player will be massive for her to kind of use her as an understudy, as it were. And yeah, Katie Daly-McLean's a big loss, but having Zoe come into that role, and like Chris just said, Scarrett as well, I think that'll be really good for the side because, you know, they lead the team kind of thing. So yeah, it'll be good. No, not that I can think of. Think it's a decent squad. It'll be really, really exciting to see how they go at the weekend for sure.
And before we talk about England's opponents this weekend, Elizabeth's spoken to Jess Breach about all things England and a bit of, you know, just life around camp, this, that, and the other. And you can listen to that excerpt of that interview now. And there will be
a risk. What's the move been like in camp this week? How excited are you as a squad to begin your Six Nations campaign at the weekend and try and defend your title?
I think it's been really good. I think it's nice to get back into sort of like a camp environment. Like, we've been doing quite a few like 2-day camps. So only one-nighters to actually get into like a good like couple of weeks of camp. I think it's really good like to bring us all back together again. And I think the move's really good. I think everyone's quite excited to have the potential to put on an England shirt again and like to represent our country and, you know, to just put their best foot forward, really, which I think is really cool. Like, I think lots of people have been performing well in the 80, 15s, and just to see if they can put that through into an England shirt.
Like, what's it been like, the environment in camp? Like, because obviously the players, you know, have had to have quite a secure bubble. Is that, obviously it's been different for you guys because of all the testing and stuff. Like, has that been quite hard?
No, I actually think it's been quite good. I think to know that we're all safe, I think it's actually really important. Mm-hmm. And I think the first time I ever had a test, I was like, this is so weird.
Horrible, isn't it?
Yeah, like something going in your throat and then going in your nose. Oh, vile.
Makes your eyes water as well.
Yeah. And like, you would never ever think that. Like, never think that.
No.
Like, 5 years ago, 2 years ago, a year ago, 2 years ago, you'd never think, oh, yeah, I'm going to put something down my throat and then put it up my nose. Like, awful.
So true, it is.
I think, yeah, it just makes us feel a lot safer in the environment. And yes, it is different. And, you know, I don't have Zoe as my roomie.
That must be hard, yeah.
I think it is really hard. She loves having company. But she's, like, brought her Xbox in and stuff, cool. So she's fine. But for me, like, I don't mind it. I think I try and stay out of my room a lot during the day. So mm-hmm. when it comes to the evening, like, then I've only just spent my time in the evening.
Good, yeah.
So it's still, like, a room. And, like, we can, like, socialise outside. And obviously, I think having the restrictions lifted as a nation with, massive, like, groups of six outside helps us a lot as well.
Yeah, that's really cool. So what challenges do you think you'll face as a squad when taking on Scotland this weekend?
Obviously Scotland played France like last and they drew, which was fantastic for them. So I think, yeah, we're definitely going to have to put our heads together and, you know, put a good game up against them. And they're definitely a surprising team. Obviously, you know, they drew against France. And we're just going to have to treat it as any other game. And obviously it's our first game out, so there'll be a couple of mistakes, but actually to put a really hard and good performance in, I think will, like, put us in a really good stead for the rest of the tournament, which will be exciting. And I think they're still quite a developing team and, you know, want to challenge us and we want to challenge them. So I think it'll be a really good game.
Definitely. How much are you loving your rugby at the moment? You're playing so well for Quins at the moment and you seem to score tries for fun.
I think at the beginning of the season with Quins, it was quite a challenge for me. I think we were very forward dominated and I think I was struggling and I was like, well, where do I fit in this team? Like, it's not using my assets sort of thing. But actually to the second part of this season, like, we've maybe lost some forwards through injuries and stuff and actually made us become better as a whole team and, like, be unified, which I think is really important, which has then helped me come into my game a lot more. I'm really enjoying my rugby. And I think that's, when I enjoy my rugby, I play the best.
Yeah.
And I think that's important. And I think that's for anyone, really. Like, when you enjoy it the most, you're going to actually perform the best. And when people around you are enjoying it, they're going to be beneficial to you.
Growing up, did you want to be a professional rugby player, or did you have other career aspirations? When I speak to players in the men's premiership, often they tell me it was their dream, like, to play rugby professionally. Was it different for you as a young girl growing up because it wasn't professional back then, would you say?
Yeah, I don't think that I wanted to be a professional rugby player. I think I wanted to be in sport, like I did athletics. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I ever wanted to be like an athlete. But I enjoyed sport the most. But I think, like, job-wise, like, my mum's a nurse and I really, like, enjoyed that. But I'm not clever enough to be a nurse. But I think if I didn't have rugby and had to, like, dedicate my time to something else, maybe, yeah, paediatric nurse. But I think, like, I just enjoyed sport so much, I didn't really think about what I wanted to be in the future. Like, I think I just actually enjoyed my childhood and didn't think of that, really.
Who inspired you to pick up a rugby ball? And yeah, so you kind of said, like, where did your playing career kind of begin?
Yeah, my dad and my brother, who used to play at my local rugby club, which is just a rugby club. And I used to just go watch my dad on a Saturday play for the first team. And then, yeah, my brother used to train on a Sunday. So I used to just go and watch and just, like, sort of, like, and be annoying, that annoying sister. And then he was like, oh, you can, like, join your own team. And then, yeah, and then I did, and I never stopped from, like, the age of, like, 6 or 7. Yeah, and I just really enjoyed it. I think when I was younger, anything that my brother could do, I could do, sort of thing. So I never really thought, being a girl, I couldn't do it. And, like, my parents never, like, were like, oh, are you sure? Like, are you sure you don't want to do it? Like, are you sure you want to do it? But, no, they were always really supportive. And, like, I did everything that my brother did. So, apart from, like, golf, because I just find it so boring.
It's very girl, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, so I did anything that he did. So we never really had that, like, stereotypical, like, barrier.
So have you faced any setbacks growing up? And have you had to overcome any challenges to get to where you are today?
Not really. I think you get to a point, maybe it comes to people, like, later, where you think to yourself, like, is this really what I want to do? I think because it gets so tough. And I think that came to me quite early. And then, like, I sort of, like, overcome it and was like, yeah, no, this is definitely what I want to do. But not really, like, other than, like, injuries and stuff, like, I've never, like, questioned it. And, like, maybe last year or, yeah, like 18 months ago, I had to question what came first, like, family or, you know, rugby. But I think it gives you a different view of life. And, like, yes, I'm passionate about rugby, and yes, I want to do it as long as I can professionally, but actually, like, the value of other things is as important. And I think sometimes we forget that when actually we go back into the real world and we realize that it's still really, really important.
Do you see yourself as a role model now with the way the women's game is growing? And who was your role model growing up, if you had one?
I think it's very odd when people say that, but I think I probably am, yes.
Why do you think it's odd?
Not odd, but, like, I think when I think of role models, I think of, like, Michelle Obama, like...
Yeah.
Serena Williams, like, proper big, like, names. But I think we are big names for young kids.
Absolutely, and you're inspiring the next generation, aren't you? Yeah. Like, I know when I was playing, like, when I was much younger and stuff, like, there wasn't really an awful lot about that. Like, I only really got into it, well, I started watching women's rugby, like, in 2014, and obviously there was still stuff around, but when it wasn't on the TV as much and things, like, now I can see that growth within that time frame, and obviously... Yeah, like, now it's much bigger, isn't it? So it's quite exciting.
Yeah, definitely. I love being role models. I think there's this one girl at my old rugby club, and, like, she's amazing, and she's so tiny, and I just think, oh, I can't remember being that small and wanting to play. And but yeah, like, she definitely inspires me as well. I know that sounds a bit weird, but her, like, coming to the games and, like, wanting photos and, like, just cheering on, I think is amazing. And I think we definitely have a better connection as female players after games. Like, we love it. Like, that's what we, like, do it for. And I think maybe, you know, because it's a slow grower and it's getting there and, you know, it's getting to that next level, we appreciate the support a lot more. Yeah. And we, like, we love it. Like, and I think maybe for, you know, because of Corona, it affects, maybe it does affect us a bit more. Yes, we don't get the hundreds of thousand people in the crowd, but actually those couple of thousand mean a lot more to us.
Yeah, so obviously Scotland have got a fairly strong team. 11 of the squad playing the AP15s. These includes Evie Tonkin, Chloe Rolley, Helen Nelson, Jenny Maxwell, Rona Lloyd, who's obviously the try-scoring machine that plays for Loughborough Lightning, Corinne Grant, Abby Evans, Jodie Retty, it's later than we usually film these podcasts, Chris. Rachel Malcolm, Lisa Cockburn, and Leah Bartlett. There we go. Got through the names in the end. They finished fifth this time last year. Obviously, the tournament wasn't actually concluded. The only thing that had to be concluded was England's game against Italy to see if they got a Grand Slam or not. They haven't played together since. How detrimental could that potentially be? Be to a squad, because obviously I know we're going to say that about a couple of the teams coming up, but in terms of actually gelling after quite a long time of probably not seeing each other, if we look at three lockdowns and just everything else that's gone on in between, is that a concern, Chris?
It's a good kind of assumption to make. I think Joe Day could be. What's interesting, which is kind of like a little underlying theme when you look at maybe Scotland and Wales, and I'm just looking at some of the players that you had listed there in front of us, Joe. But a lot of them do play in the AP15s, don't they? So they kind of have had the game time. And it's not as if, you know, they've only played a couple of games here and there. The AP15s have done a wonderful job to get all the games on. And, you know, you mentioned a few of the Queen's girls and the Loughborough girls and that Scotland squad as well. So that might help them. You know, they'll be going into camp having, you know, that fitness levels up. But it was quite interesting. Rachel Malcolm did this Nations launch this week, and watched a bit of a video of it before, and she was saying that they've actually been able to like get some consistency while they've been together, and which is really impressive considering all the challenges that everyone's had to face. And it's weird because when you kind of listen to captains and coaches, and you'll know this, Joe, you'll know this, Beth, like before a big tournament, whether it's rugby, whether it's football, whatever it is, you kind of get a sense, oh, that's a cliche, that's what they're going to say.
Yeah.
Whereas Rachel spoke, and it was like, you can tell she's just smiling on her face, she's absolutely buzzing to be in camp with Scotland, and, you know, playing England speaks for itself. But you get the sense that they are desperate to compete, they want to go maybe right a few wrongs from previous years against England. And you mentioned, obviously, Joe, before, that they haven't played for a while, but I think they've got a draw, am I right in saying, maybe against France last year, yes, or last year's Six Nations. So it shows that they can compete against those top teams. And I think that's going to be important for development. I know Gary Healy's going to be focusing on four of the young cap players in that Scotland squad. But again, I think that maybe highlights, I might be wrong, but might highlight the depth which they're creating there. So you're absolutely right, Joe. You can say that, you know, they haven't been together and it might be a bit of a cause for concern. But a lot of these girls obviously played AP15s. But just listening to Rachel Malcolm, she seems pretty excited by the challenge that is ahead of them over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and for me, one of their key misses is going to be Jade Conkle, who's obviously taking a break from rugby in order to pursue things outside of rugby, which is obviously an important thing for players to do, especially as the women's game isn't wholly professional at the moment. And that's something that's a debate for. There's plenty of time for that debate, and it will rage on pretty much every day of the week anyway. And as Chris has alluded to there, Beth, do you think, and it's a difficult one, do you feel like this kind of time off, it just makes them want to have a bigger performance? I don't know how it would be. I mean, just from your perspective, obviously, I mean, I know that you played a little bit of rugby in your time as well.
Yeah, it is a long time to have off, isn't it? I think, yeah, they might be relishing, like you say, to kind of right a few wrongs and stuff. I know when I was chatting to Jess and stuff, she can't wait to get going. Like, because it's been a long time, hasn't it? And yeah, even though they're playing at club level, international level's quite different. And I think she said, even though they've been in that kind of COVID bubble and stuff, it still helped them. And they said they feel pretty safe, you know, having that testing, and that's why it's there. And I think actually they'll be relishing the chance to get to play all together. You know, they're a close-knit group by the looks of things, and you can really see that. And she said that she's loving her rugby, you know, and you can see that she's always playing with a smile on her face and stuff. And I think, yeah, the Quinn side are good at the moment, and she'll be playing with a few of those in the England team. So yeah, I don't know. You could look at it both ways, couldn't you? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think from the competitive side of things, I think having that long out, and we definitely saw it with a couple of teams during all the restarts that we got to experience in sports, that there was actually that upturn in form in terms of pre-break and post-break. I'm interested to see what it is, but obviously, as we've said before, so many of these players have actually had the opportunity to play top flight rugby in England. I know from a piece that Gary Heatley did the other week, you know, kind of the women's game is still at a bit of a standstill in Scotland. And I know that that might not be great for some of the players there. I'm sure some of them have been able to get into to camps because they're being classified as elite performance players by the Scottish government. So you never know what's going to happen there. And I was actually just thinking a moment ago, it seems like a long time ago now that obviously that last game took place between England and Scotland up at, well, it wasn't meant to be Murrayfield, but it ended up being Murrayfield. And what seems so utterly bizarre about that is that was postponed because of?
COVID.
COVID-19.
Of course.
Yeah. That feels eerie.
What was that like 14 months ago, pretty much?
Yeah, and it was like a 7-0 game or something ridiculous like that. It was in the snow, wasn't it? And that's why that picture of Sarah's come from with Chloe Rolley with the PG tits. Which I don't approve of. It should be Yorkshire tea. And then the final team in
Charlie
that
made you say that. Charlie definitely. No.
I refuse to drink any other sort of tea. I tell you what, fun story. That's how me and Charlie bonded.
A lot of hot drinks with this Mr. Beckett. A lot of hot drinks.
Yeah, loads.
Yeah. That's why he and I are friends. Anyway. So Italy. The final team in the pool. For those that have seen my notes for this, it's two lines because they haven't published a squad.
Oh.
Unless they have since I did the thing, the run order. So I don't really know what to expect from Italy. It's kind of one of those, again, where for the last couple of years they have been wooden spoon. But however, anytime you talk to any of the players talking about playing Italy, they always discuss how it is. They actually are quite a nutritional team. I think we saw that in one of the games that took place at Sandy Park a couple of years ago. Italy were actually really competitive in that game. It's just kind of always a late runoff there. So what we have to say is a mystery team in this tournament. It'd be interesting to see what they do.
I think you're right, Joe. I think a couple of years ago, this is where my knowledge isn't the best, but I think you're right. They were really competitive a couple of years ago, weren't they? And I think, you know, they'll be. I think what is different with them is, I think, because we can kind of relate to Ireland, Scotland, and Wales with these players who are playing in the AP15s. I don't think Italy have been able to play domestically, so that's where they may be, a couple of steps behind the other teams at the moment. So I think you're right. I think the mystery tag is absolutely right. Yeah, if we don't know too much about them, but I think we don't know where they're at in terms of a squad. Because they haven't had players play regular rugby. And I think that will be interesting. But maybe the format will suit them. Maybe they know, right, let's train for two big games and see where we're at. So it'll be very interesting to see how they get on.
Sounds like a lot of S&C work. Pool B preview time. I'd probably say that France are England's biggest contenders. I think we saw that in particular in the two games in the autumn. France were massively competitive. We're pushing England right to the very end of each fixture. And I think that second fixture, I believe France won it. I alluded to it earlier. No one corrected me.
No, there were two wins for England, mate.
Was it two wins for England? I feel like France won one of those. Maybe that's my little French side that
I
sometimes comes out.
I think I've won one as well.
My little French side? Is this my French side coming out again, Chris?
I'm pretty sure, because they were winning, weren't they? They were winning for like 20 minutes ago. And then
go in the corner. Yeah, and then actually that's true, actually. And then they converted it and then they won, didn't they?
Yeah, because Simon unloaded the bench and it was like Katie, Dana McLean came on, Chad came on. No Hunt, I think, came on. There was so many.
So I, in my mind, France won that. So I think that's why France are the biggest threats to England at this stage in time. I don't know why I thought I won that. Anyway.
No, I did think that.
It's very easy because it was like 23-10 like 15 years ago.
It was crazy.
It's the same as the Autumn Nations Cup final. I still think France won that.
Mm.
I still think they won this Six Nations, to be honest. I don't know what's wrong with me. But yeah, in terms of that, I mean, if I just look at some of the names in that, Jesse Tremoulier, Safi Ndiaye, Shannon Izar, Marine Menanger, I thought someone had actually fiddled with that name there. I don't think they have. they're the ones for me to look out for. They've been so consistent for France over the years. So I think Safi Ndiaye, she's so dangerous because she can play lock, she can play the back row, pretty much across the back row. And yeah, I mean, if we look at just recent history, they're the last team to have actually bested England to a Six Nations title. I know that in recent years, there's been a couple of changes to the structure of how the union runs it with the women's game in particular. But with all this said, we've seen how close they've pushed England. So them playing an Ireland team and a Wales team that, again, haven't had much time together in the grand scheme of things. I know the Ireland players have had a little bit longer because they had to be in Ireland in order for their training camp last week because they weren't allowed to travel again in between and so on and so forth. For me, Chris, they have to be favourites.
To challenge, for Pool B? I think so, mate. I think so. I think, obviously, they're not going to meet England until the latter stages if everything goes as paper suggests. But I think they will have a point to prove. They'll be fuming, to put it bluntly. I think they'll be annoyed at the fact that they lost that game that we touched on there, that they should have won at Twickenham. They would be annoyed that they've lost the Six Nations title to England over the last couple of years. They'll be annoyed that England went to France and won a couple of years ago in a test series, I think, where they went to France and they beat them at Sandy Park. I might be wrong with that. That they haven't beaten England for a while, to sum that up, and they will want to put the marker down. I think what might sort of even spur them on a little bit more now is they've got a bit more time before the World Cup, because I think what France way have done is put everything into this tournament and really make a statement before the World Cup. But if they can actually do it now and still have the reserve to keep building towards 2022, and they could really challenge England again. We know the strength of England, we know the professionalism, we know the depth. We talked about that right at the top of the podcast, but France will be a dangerous side, and you're absolutely right, Joe. That final game in the autumn suggests they will come out firing, and it'll be very interesting to see how they get on in that Pool B, because I can see them going straight through and beating England once again.
Certainly can. And obviously they're going to be facing England in when the World Cup does eventually take place in 2022. I think Simon said, what was it Simon said, as soon as France were drawn as an opposite number, it was, of course it would be France, because it was literally 2 days after the last game or something ridiculous like that.
I think Beth spoke to Sarah Hunter.
Yeah. Him and Sarah Hunter, yeah. And Sarah was like, gosh, you couldn't make it up, did you? It was crazy how they were drawn together. But I think it just makes it all the more exciting, doesn't it? But yeah, gosh, that seems like ages ago. That was back October, November of last year, I suppose. Yeah. It was one of my first ones. Yeah, mental. I don't know where
it would have been.
Yeah, match.
It does seem a long time ago, actually. But yeah, definitely for me, France are the ones to watch. I think when I eventually put together my fantasy side, there are going to be two or three names in there that I'm hoping are going to get some decent points in, to be honest. Obviously, one of their first the teams that they'll be playing in the pool stage are Ireland, who have a 35-player squad with six of those players representing AP15's teams. That's Anna Capless. Oh, no. Cleoda?
Don't ask me.
Yeah, just Maloney from Wasps, Claire Malloy, Leah Lyons, Laura Sheehan, and Lauren Delaney, who obviously is a friend of TRU. On the whole, I mean, it's largely the same situation as Scotland, where kind of game time is a bit far and in between for literally 29 players in this squad. Does it feel like the same thing as Scotland, Beth? Because it just seems, to me in particular, with so many players that haven't had the requisite game time you'd expect coming into this sort of thing, it does seem like there's a lot of players there that aren't going to have much game time, isn't there?
No, it's a lot to fill in, isn't it, with not much time. I mean, how long have they been training for? Similar amount of time to England, or...?
They would have had a bit longer, but with no game time in the middle.
Which is just, pants really, isn't it, compared to what England have had. It's a bit different. So, yeah, again, I think there'll be quite a few mistakes. But even Jess touched on that when I spoke to her, like, not long ago. She said that there probably would be mistakes against Scotland as well, because they haven't teamed up for a little while. And it's just one of those. It'll be interesting. It's a bit hit and miss, isn't it? But even like the England men's team, we saw that. I think COVID had a huge impact on that. I mean, we shouldn't blame it on that, but I don't think it helped, did it? I mean, if you're not playing regularly and restrictions are there, it does make it very difficult, doesn't it?
Certainly does. Yeah. And there is obviously one of the key things for these players in the AP15s as well, they've been playing under amended rules for literally mm-hmm. the past 7 months or so now. And obviously, Giselle Mather was talking about last week how that's actually allowed her to upskill players. So maybe some of these AP15 players are going to come in and be the stars of the show, so to speak, because obviously we don't really know what to expect from a lot of the others. And if the AP15s players have been getting regular game time, they've been performing week in, week out, having that kind of structure of a two training weeks, training sessions a week before going into a game at the weekend, that is probably the most beneficial thing to them. However, we say all this, and then Ireland actually did win the tournament in 2015, which actually, on the grand scheme of things, wasn't terrifically long ago. Chris?
Yeah, it's the thing is, and I think Ireland have said it this week themselves, I think a few people have spoken about it, is that they know it's a big, big target to try and win the Six Nations and wrestle that potentially away from England and then maybe France, if we're saying France are going to be second favourites. And obviously with Ireland, which is different, is they won't play until, is it the 10th, I think their first game is, against Wales. So they've got that extra week off. And whether they're going to use, I think they'll have to, as Beth touches on, they'll have to, you know, really focus on, you know, making sure they cut out those errors and really work on their game plan. And I think that's probably what they've been doing. You know, if they haven't had the lack of rugby since, you know, the beginning of COVID-19, they would have been training really hard, and that can have its benefits at times. You can really, you know, focus on a game plan which can cause teams problems. And, you know, I think that Wales-Ireland game is going to be incredibly interesting because both teams want to prove a point, both teams want to make a statement, and I'm sure Ireland, having had just to train and hardly played any games, will be absolutely bang up for it.
Yeah, certainly. And obviously I've written down there's literally 5 uncapped players in the squad. To me, that is, personally, I think that's really important because I think that shows that on the whole, there is a really settled group of players there. I think that means that they are building towards this next World Cup, which is, you know, it's just literally around the corner now. And Adam Griggs is, he's obviously been there a little while now. He's brought in all these players. He's capped a lot of them.
Yeah, I think they've got, again, this is poor research, but they've got World Cup qualifiers as well, haven't they, Joe? Ireland, I think. They're right in saying. So, again, I guess that's all gearing up to what you're saying there, though. Well, they're trying to make a squad that's ready for those bigger games to get them to the World Cup in New Zealand.
Yeah, certainly. And obviously, they've obviously got their core group of players there. I mean, we talk about, you know, Lauren Delaney, Shealia Lyons, Yannick Apsis, and so on. They are the players that are kind of their star players because they don't play domestically in the country. But now we have to move on to Wales. So we're under new leadership for the Six Nations as new head coach Warren Abrahams takes charge of the side. For those that are familiar with the name of Warren Abrahams, he is, of course, the man who's worked with England Sevens over the years, the USA Sevens for a period. And he's just a very well-respected coach all round. And obviously, for those that aren't aware, Wales for a number of years now have kind of not had a consistent leadership, which means that every Six Nations they've had a new coaching group come in, and that's been shown with some of their results, especially when you look at the amount of players that are actually playing in the AP15s that are playing, you know, a good standard of rugby all round. So, I mean, if we kind of look at it, there's 32 players in the squad. They've not played, and in the last game they did play, they got absolutely run ragged by England at the Stoop. I was at that game. It wasn't a great day if you were Wales fans, to be honest, especially as England's men did eventually go on to beat Wales at Twickenham not too long after that. If we look at some of the key names in there, we've got Jade Knight, Flo Williams, who plays for Wasps, Donna Rose, Swan, Lily Crap, Eleanor Snowsill, Robin Locke and Jasmine Joyce. I mean, those are some pretty box office names straight away. Although, even though Flo Williams hasn't even played for Wales yet, she's one of the form 10s in the AP15s.
Talking to me or Chris?
Anyone. I mean, whoever's in agreement with me can speak first. I'm completely fine with whatever.
I'm not as familiar with it, but I know how good Jasmine Joyce is. I think she's wicked. She's super speedy. And I like her. I remember watching her in the, was it the GB7 squad?
Yes.
When was that? 2016?
2016 now, yeah.
Yeah, I think I remember watching them, and that was when I kind of started to think that I wanted to play rugby as well, actually. I remember watching all of the team, but she stood out for me. She's just electric, isn't she? I think she'll be really exciting. And yeah, excuse me about the rest of them. I'm not as fully aware as I am with her. Oops. But yeah, I'll pass it to Chris.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right in terms of those players again, Joe, and playing and getting that experience in the Prem 15s. A lot of Bristol notes there. I know we chatted to Charlie last week about that just after our Six Nations Championship and podcast that we did. But I think with Warren coming in, there seems to be a good kind of vibe from everyone that you hear talk about the Wales environment at the moment. I know Nick Heath, there was a video, I think Nick actually put out on socials, or it might have been AP15, so he did an interview with Kira Bevan, who's in the Wales squad, and she was kind of quite full of praise for the culture and the style that Warren was trying to implement on the team. And I think that's exactly what you need as a team. And if you don't want to compare it to the men's team, because, you know, we're on a Women's Six Nations podcast, but that was the message that we were getting out of the men's camp as well during the Six Nations, that everyone was enjoying the environment, everyone was buying into what Wayne Pivat says, and it seems the same for Warren. I think what he's trying to do is get the players to understand what it means to represent Wales, whilst also adapting his philosophy and imprinting it on the players. So, like I said before, I think Wales Ireland will be a really interesting game, based on the fact that Ireland haven't played much rugby, and the players will want to use all those hard, long training camps that they've been in to fine tune things and then hit the ground running when that Wales game comes around. But from a Wales perspective, you've got these stars of the AP15s, and it's the start of a new era. So it's quite an exciting game to look at in week two of the Six Nations.
And it does feel like for a long time, that is the key thing that's been missing for Wales, that consistency in coaching, kind of someone around there to say, this is a project, this is what we want to achieve. Because they do have wonderful individuals. It's just about bringing them together as a team. I think there was once upon a time that I would have definitely have said that Eleanor Snowsill, for example, was arguably one of the best goal kickers in the women's game, arguably one of the best playmakers in the women's game. And, you know, and we talk about just, you know, some really great athletes. And obviously what we have to remember is, as well, with Wales, none of these players are professional. And we still talk about them as the very top tier of international. And it's easy to do that with England, because we sometimes forget that the majority of the ones that we're talking about in particular, you know, we're talking about them and they're professional players. They have the time to commit to professional rugby. But with Wales and Ireland and, you know, and Scotland and France, even France, there was once upon a time that France, you know, were reimbursing players for their efforts. And I know that's had to change over the years because of COVID and this, that and the other, but that's kind of what makes the Women's Six Nations great, is that irregardless of who they're playing against, you know, especially every game against England and every tournament, whether that's, you know, football, rugby, checkers, like whatever the hell it is, there's always going to be a competitive edge, because playing England, playing anyone, you want to do your country proud. And I think we're going to see that. And it's such a big drive for so many of these individuals as well. And that's why they go to the AP15s, to be the best players that can be, to push themselves to the absolute limit and achieve everything that they know they can achieve. For example, we know a number of these players have been named in the GB7 squad and are hoping to go to, you know, Japan later this year. And some of them were obviously hoping to go to Japan and then to New Zealand, probably getting a connecting flight, to be honest, through Tokyo. And that's why, that's probably why we love the women's game, because it is a throwback to pre-1996, when the game went completely professional, completely bananas. And the only way for the women's game to improve is through these amazing sponsors that we know that everyone's trying to secure. We want to see this game go to the very top that it can be. And that's why the Women's World Cup, or sorry, it's not the Women's World Cup anymore, just the World Cup, has been postponed until 2022, because the game has to achieve everything it can do, and it has to be seen by as many people as possible. I suppose all that's left to say is, well, I suppose what we'll do first is we'll go for predictions. Beth, who do you think is going to take home this Six Nations Championship, and why?
It's got to be England, doesn't it? Got to say that.
It's the England super fan. I should have seen this coming.
No, but I think in terms of their strength in depth and the squad that they have, you know, massive drive for the World Cup next year as well. I think they are going to win. Yeah, I think strength in the squad, you know, is really huge when you look at it as a whole. And like we said, you know, even though they've got injuries, they've still got some class players that are coming back, and you know, they've had the positives of still being able to play, you know, within that Allianz Premiership 15s, which I think is will really help them. So hopefully they will win on Saturday and win the full tournament. Fingers crossed.
Definitely. Chris, same question.
Same answer, I think. I can't really add much more to what Elizabeth just said there, really. The depth in the squads. What if I was, you know, I know the coaches and the players of the opposition team won't be looking at that, but if I saw England's squad and go, oh my God, look at all that depth they've got there and look at how many other talented players they can bring on or start in a game and change the way they play. And it's exciting if you're an England fan, if you're a Red Roses fan, it is really exciting because I know how well they've done over the last 2 years. But as I said at the top of the pod, they're evolving and Simon wants to change the way they play. And it's very difficult to look past an England team that is not even taking a step backwards. I mean, what negative results have they had really in the last 2-3 years? Maybe when they played New Zealand a couple of years ago, but they are continuing to set the bar. And I honestly can't see anyone stopping them this time around. I think the depth they've got in the squad's incredible. I think in a way a silver lining that the World Cup has been postponed is Simon gets to pick see all these people in action. You know, you mentioned Ellie Green before, and you know, she's a development player in the squad, you know, and she's the top point scorer ever in the Allianz Premier 15. So it's that in itself, just her as an individual, probably encapsulates this England squad in terms of depth and the talent in there. And it's exciting. I think Simon would have a lot to think about going into the World Cup. It was this year. I think he's going to have more to think about going into the World Cup next year. I can't really see past England. Or what, you know, I'd love to see, you know, an Ireland or a Wales and Scotland make a really good fist of it, but I can't see past the Red Roses once again for a third Grand Slam in a row.
And before I go on to mine, I just want to talk about quickly, and it's something we alluded to earlier, Beth, obviously I think you mentioned it, so I'd like you to answer the question. The game's getting increased exposure this year because of the broadcast rights been sorted by the Beeb, so to speak. How important do you think that is for the game? Because obviously we saw in the autumn that the ratings were immense.
Massive, yeah. I wrote about it in one of my articles. I think it's huge. You know, even if, you know, because we have the odd fan, like for the men's Six Nations touching on it, you know, like sometimes they'll only watch that, you know, because it's on the TV. So, you know, it's harder to watch the AP15s and women's rugby for international games in general. But just think, like, if that just spurs a few people on to watch it, we saw what happened, you know, when the World Cup was on and how many people tuned into that. I think it's huge for the game. And yeah, with it being on the iPlayer and BBC Two, I still think it'll be fantastic. And I think, yeah, because otherwise, you know, like myself, I remember I started watching it, 2014? And to me, you know, that was only because it was on ITV 3 or 4, you know, and now we look at it and they're on a much bigger scale. So hopefully we can continue to see that happening. And, you know, because even watching it on YouTube, it's hard to follow and it's great, but it would be great to see that on bigger terrestrial TV too. So yeah, I think it's huge. And yeah, I'm looking forward to tuning in and watching it. It'll be really good fun. So yeah.
Lovely. And just before we wrap up, I'm going to throw a spanner in everyone's works and I'm going to say France are going to win it, because I'm going to be that person. I'm not England's biggest fan. If anyone's read my articles, they know I'm not England's biggest fan. It's mainly the men I have a problem with. The women, quite like. I think they're a good team. Can I say that? I'd probably say that. It's objective, I suppose. But yeah. That was the Talking Rugby Union Women's Six Nations preview for 2021. Whether or not it'll be one in 2022 is yet to be decided. But thank you very much for listening, for watching to this Talking Rugby Union podcast. You can follow Talking Rugby Union at Talk Rugby Union on Twitter, at Talking Rugby Union on Instagram. Just type in Talking Rugby Union to LinkedIn or Facebook and we will be the first result there. Thank you very much and see you next time.